So we are going to transition now into our next guest. He is Robert Blake Whitehill, and his latest book is called Tap, Rack, Bang. Very interesting thriller, so we want to get Robert here on the show. So, Robert, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing?
John, thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you so again for coming on. We haven't had the opportunity to speak. Your publicist kind of, you know, sent over. I kind of read what it was. I'm like, very interesting premise of the book, so I wanted to get you on so you could talk about it. So why don't you give us a little bit about Tap, Rack, Bang and the inside scoop into it?
Well, absolutely. Tap, Rack, Bang is book three of the Ben Blackshaw series, and the series begins back with the book Dead Rise. Dead Rise starts with Ben diving for oysters near his Chesapeake Bay home of Smith Island. It's about 70 miles from Washington, D.C., but it's worlds away. So he's diving for oysters on the bottom. He finds the wreck of a speedboat, a very recent wreck, probably from a recent hurricane. And aboard that boat are 20 metal crates. 19 of those crates are filled with gold bullion, and the 20th crate contains a dirty bomb with its timer counting down to zero just 24 hours away. If that weren't enough, he looks over at the helm of the boat, and he sees the body of a man that he has not seen in 15 years, his father. Now, that's how things get rolling. Then we've got Maynard Chalk. He's a corrupt NSA agent over in Washington, D.C. He brings a pack of bloodthirsty mercenaries down on his Smith Island home to recover the cargo that was stolen from him. So Blackshaw has to rally his neighbors to repulse this invasion. And then he's got to well, the stakes are pretty high, because if he fails, he loses his home, he loses the love of his life, and it's likely he loses the opening skirmish of World War III. That's the first book. Nitro Express is the second, and the one that we're talking about, Tap, Rack, Bang, that's the third outing where he is in hiding. I like it when, you know, I like stories where the gunslinger is brought out of retirement, but typically I think I like to add layers and stakes on top of that, where in addition to being in retirement, he's in hiding. If he puts his head up above ground, he could die and lose a tremendous amount in the rest of his life, in addition to his life. So
yeah,
that's
I agree.
Beginning premise.
Yeah, I agree. So, I definitely like it. And I think that what it reminds me of, too, is, like you just said, bringing him back out of retirement. I always liked that. I think it was season 4 or 5 of 24 where Jack was in hiding, but then he gets pulled back in. And I think I love that premise. How you see your character have to get pulled back in from something that he wants to try to get away from, but he just can't.
It's a common trope, but the best way to do it is to add in additional layers that raise the stakes at every possibility. Now, for Tap, Rack, Bang, the title, by the way, refers to what they call an immediate action. If you get a jam and an automatic weapon, you take out the clip, you tap it to seat the bullets correctly, you put the clip back in, you rack the weapon, and with any luck at that point, it's bang. I have a cousin who's a very highly decorated Vietnam War veteran. He says the loudest sound in a firefight is click when you got no gun going off. Yeah, it's pretty impactful. So, yes, he's drawn into a plot where he, against his better judgment, because he's trying to keep a low profile and stay in hiding, he is asked and pretty much pressured into rescuing a young girl from a human trafficking situation. And he goes forward against his better judgment, like I said, but he risks, once again, losing everything that is of value. And I think that, you know, for emotional, you can't just go for emotion as an author. You've got to go for emotional truth. I mean, peaks and valleys, that's a roller coaster ride, and we get tired of those pretty quickly. But the emotional truth, I think, for a character's motivation is underpinnings by fear. Fear of losing what you've got. Fear of losing what you want most desperately. And that keeps the characters honest and credible, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing. It's not really a flaw. Of course, a lot of characters have some kind of a flaw, some kind of an internal struggle that they have to go with. But I do believe that when you bring into a lot of emotional situations like you're just talking about, it creates tension amongst the characters. And to kind of see and especially for you as the author, you know, it kind of surprises you. How are they going to be able to get out of these situations, and how, and what type of person are they going to be once it's over? And that's something that you have to kind of explore as you're moving through, like you said, from Dead Rise and now up through Taprak Bang. So is that some kind of a conscious decision that you do when you are discussing and getting these books down and figuring out how you maneuver through and when you're finishing them?
That's absolutely true, John. I think one of the things that as an author you realize is that you may have a protagonist that is sort of your lead character, but unfortunately as the author, you are not his best friend. You are absolutely in league with the antagonist, because a real good protagonist is measured by his enemies and the strength of his enemies and how powerful are they and what is it going to take to get through and vanquish them. Now, Blackshaw is a decent man with extraordinary skills as a former Navy SEAL. And the decision that he's constantly struggling with is the fact that he is no longer in a declared theater of war, and he has moral qualms when the situations in which he finds himself require him to take lethal action against somebody, particularly on domestic U.S. soil. So that's one of his big internal quandaries. He also has crises of faith, wondering where is God in all of this, if at all. And so he's got his various fellow Smith Islanders, one of whom is Reverend Mosby, who tries to, you know, help lend an extra hand on his moral, his rudder, that is to say, to keep the moral compass pointed true north. But it's not always easy. So, you know, I don't think it's an interesting character if they're all black and white. They have to live very much in the gray area, and that's where the surprises come.
Oh, yeah, I mean, absolutely. And that's also something that's extremely important in character development is, like you said, the black and white areas, those are easy to define, but it's how they maneuver through the gray that gets them to go either way. And the one thing also that, you know, in the book that, of course, is a big news topic right now is when you have the psychopaths in here that are creating that website. Now, La Abattoir, I might say that wrong, on which hostages are going to be tortured on and then executed. Now, of course, with ISIS and the beheadings, I mean, that's something that's very kind of close to home. You know, how is it when you're writing something that all of a sudden, you know, becomes, I guess you want to say, reality? Because I would have to say that you probably had that idea and the book was probably already done or at least almost finished by the time that all this stuff started coming out, because this has been like the last 6 months. So how is that? I mean, how do you feel like as an author when you kind of see those things, I guess, when it almost come to life?
It's. I have an author friend who's put it best. He says, it's only fiction till it happens. And I wish I could claim that quote, because it's absolutely true. It's only fiction until it actually happens. And, you know, as an author, I want to create a powerful scenario, powerful plots, powerful characters, male and female. And so, you kind of reach into your imagination for the basest part of human nature. And unfortunately, between Dead Rise and then Nitro Express and then Taprak Bang, every idea that has come about has its basis in reality around about the time of publication. So I'm either really good at, underestimating, cultural morals around the world, or I'm just lucky and we've got coincidence going on like crazy here. But, I like to keep it topical, and I thought I was doing okay with the human trafficking, but when you're murdering somebody on camera, when you're murdering somebody on the internet, and you've got this snuff angle, now ISIS has its politics behind as their espoused motivation for why they're killing people on camera. I used, simple venal, moral bankruptcy and sort of the cash motivation for why people are setting up these awful sites, because, the stereotype is once people achieve a certain level in society, they achieve fame, they achieve fortune or office or anything like that, that they become a little bit jaded, a little bit bored, and they're looking for the next most exciting thing. And it's these monsters that are creating L'Abattoir, which is French for the slaughterhouse. That's the reason that they get going, because they think that there is there's a market out there for this kind of, I guess, entertainment, the dance of death kind of macabre thing that we witnessed even in Anne Rice's Vampire Lestat,
right.
Or, you know, and her ilk there. So this is just
right.
sort of a modern retelling of a common problem.
Now, I want to remind everybody that we are speaking here with author Robert Blake Whitehill. Go to robertblakewhitehill.com for more information, not only on Tap Break Bang, but the entire series, which again started back with Desrise and up through Nitro Express. Now, the other thing is that, of course, right on the cover of the books, it says soon to be a major motion picture. How did that come about?
Well, that was a pretty interesting evolution. I come from a screenwriting and television writing background. I've written true crime for Discovery for shows like The New Detectives, The Bureau, Daring Capers, a few other of their programs. And in addition to that, I've worked on the ambulances of Montclair, New Jersey, where I live. So I've had my hand in and, you know, in some pretty difficult situations that have come about, both in my real life working on the ambulance and also in real life working through these true crime cases. So I guess I write with a visual eye, with an eye toward the structure. It's a basic three-act structure, but I've always loved screenplays, and I said, you know, what is the possibility for Ben Blackshaw? Can these books find a movie audience the way that they found a readership? So I began casting about with various people in the film industry that I knew from the screenwriting that I had done before. And lo and behold, I went back to my school, and one of my classmates, whom I thought had graduated to be an actor, just the same way I did when I came out of school, she was now a film producer, and her name is Stephanie Bell. Stephanie Bell just released the award-winning scientific fiction film Inverse. And I said, this might be somebody who, she may, you know, what they say, if you want a job, ask for advice. If you want advice, ask for a job. So I went to her legitimately, because she's out there in California. Who do you think would be interested? And I sent her the first manuscript, and she read Dead Rise in book form, and she loved it. And I was amazed and overjoyed. And then she said, will you send me Nitro Express? And I said, okay, I'll send you that one too. She loved Nitro Express. And I'm thinking, okay, it can't get any better than this. And then she asked for the third book, Tap, Rack, Bang. And I said, you know, Stephanie Bell, it's in manuscript form. Are you sure you want to take a look at it? I was hesitating because nobody had read it. Nobody had reviewed it. Who was going to back me and say this is just as good as the first two books? And she said, no, please, don't worry. Please send Tap, Rack, Bang. I'll read it in whatever shape it's in right now. And I said, okay. And she read it, and then she called, and I found myself on the line with her partners Michael Lipoma and Tamara Teague. It was a conference call, and she said, I love this series. I want to make all these books into films. Will you have me? It was kind of like a marriage proposal in a way, and believe me, because of what you are setting yourself up for moving forward, it is like a marriage. It's that kind of an intimate relationship in that you've got to have some heavy conversations about the direction, the vision, and things of that nature. So here we are. Hatline Productions is making the Ben Blackshaw series, all the current titles in print. It's very exciting. Sorry, I'm a little out of breath because I'm so excited by the prospect.
Now, when she proposed to you, did you say, I don't know, I have to think about it?
that lasted for about a nanosecond. And ASAP, we had attorneys talking to each other, getting the terms of the agreement. One of the things that's making me most happy is that they looked at my resume as a feature film writer, which I'll admit, I'm far more produced as a TV writer than I am as a feature writer, but I've gotten some awards from various prestigious film festivals. The Alfred P. Sloan Foundation had given me a fellowship because of one of the feature films I wrote, and it got some awards at the Hamptons International Film Festival just as a film script. But based on that and their assessment of my chops, from that, they said, man, you're the guy to adapt this into these books, into the screenplays. And I'm honored because there's a long tradition, you know, it's a very rare group like William Goldman taking Princess Bride, the novel, into Princess Bride, the movie, or Scott Smith taking, you know, A Simple Plan or The Ruins from books into movies. So to join that group is a very special feeling for me, and I can't be happier than I am with Hatline and their excitement about not just the one book, Dead Rise, but the whole series. It's very exciting.
Now that, of course, that you're in, the first thing is, did you think that you were going to be with three books? Did you have this in mind that this was going to be some kind of an ongoing series, or did it hit you maybe during the writing of Dead Rise that you wanted to keep going? How did that come about?
Well, I would have to liken it to your Green Lakes project with Donald Alan Kirsch. It's you just had this vision. You love the characters that you're working with, and you see the possibilities that extend beyond just, you know, what's happening between the two covers of one book. I like series. I think I'm not alone. I mean, you're an Agatha Christie fan yourself. We like the series that can be generated. And because we are always opening the books to familiar characters, a lot of the throat clearing, letting people know who a character is at its core, is complete. You know the skill set, but there's still room for surprises. So, you know, it's very much like that, I think. So I definitely envisioned a series from the beginning. And, you know, I love, like, Harlan Coben's characters. I love Lee Child's Jack Reacher. I like Randy Wayne White's Doc Ford series. I am a fan of the series. It's comforting for the reader, sure, but I've already done a tremendous amount of groundwork. And it's like, you know, birthing a character, a main character, over and over again and keeping it fresh is very difficult. So people like, you know, a certain subset of familiarity, but they also like the possibilities of innovation and fresh adventure.
No, it was funny that you brought up the Green Lake book, because Donald and I are revisiting and we're redoing more series and more stuff as we speak right now. I just finished my section over and he's taking it and we go back and forth. So that was kind of funny that you kind of brought that up, because yeah, we just decided let's keep going on it. So that was good that you mentioned that.
I think it's wonderful that you're doing that, because I think that there, you know, if you've done your good work on the first book, then there is always room to expand. I mean, how many days in the life of a protagonist does one book cover? It might be 24 hours. It might be, you know, 48 or 72 hours. You're stretching it out. You're dissipating some of the drama. I like to compress the action into 24 or 36 hours, if possible, just to keep everybody awake. And, you know, if you've done your work, then, of course, the life will continue growing, perhaps in your subconscious and in the subconscious of your partner. And other ideas are going to spill forth, because if you did your homework, you created great characters, they're not going to die when you hit the end, at the end of one book. They're going to keep on living and expanding, and it's just right there for you to tap into if you feel like it.
Now, you just said something that was interesting, because you're one of the only authors that I've ever interviewed that had literally said that you try to write within a time frame of 24 to 48 hours. And is that something that you consciously do while you're thinking of the book or while you're writing it, to make sure that it's really only like a day or 2 days in the life, because that keeps the pace, I mean, at like, you're talking supersonic speed at this book.
Well, I like supersonic speed of the pace, but I also like the grinding nature of that fatigue can play. You start make your characters, good as they might be, might start making mistakes, and the possibilities for errors, the grinding fatigue, you know, the compelling nature of losing daylight or the sun coming up and perhaps revealing where they are. I mean, all of those elements come into play, and I really like you said, compression is the best thing. If I find in a rough draft that I've written a plot that might be spun out over 2 or 3 days, I have to ask myself, if the stakes are that high, are they going to really be able to sleep? Are they really going to have time to grab a couple beers with their sidekick? Absolutely not. They've got to be out and doing, much in the same way our soldiers are overseas. There is no time for rest. The burden has fallen fully on their shoulders. And if they're not, you know, to some extent I subscribe to the Abe Lincoln theory that, you know, if you've got 8 hours to chop down a tree, spend seven sharpening your axe. But, you know, by the same token, you got to be out there. You got to be doing. You've got to be, I'm speaking for the hero, of course, you've got to be in motion. And if you're not in motion, you got to be trying to figure things out based on the clues that you've got in hand. So I'm very much in favor of what you're talking about. You got to compress the action into the smallest amount of time. You as an author might get a chance to sleep during the writing of the piece, but your character, you know, somebody said it, it was just a beautiful analogy. You got to put your character up a tree and start throwing rocks at him and keep that pelting going until the story is resolved.
Now, I like to also go back when authors kind of first started out, because a lot of times a lot of authors are not comfortable with the marketing ass people. You, I can see, you know, very comfortable getting out and talking and doing those things. But was it like that when you had the book Dead Rise? Because that was your first book, and you had to now get yourself into a zone where you are now the focus. You're the one that has to be the face. You're the one that has to go out there and do everything. How was that coming up, and what have you kind of learned through the way in this marketing process of trying to get, you know, your book out there to people?
It's a very interesting question, because when I came out of school, I wanted to be an actor. I thought I was very extroverted. I thought I had a tremendous amount of personality to offer to a character or to an audience. And what I discovered was that after, you know, going to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art and to the Neighborhood Playhouse School of Theater, what I've been doing is inculcating the very best writing for stage in the English language that was out there, and those rhythms were resonating within me. And then I found, wait a minute, I have to wait until a casting director and an agent and producers get together and agree that I am what they want before I can be creative. So I said to myself, you know, in the meantime, I can write, and I don't have to wait for the call in order for that to happen. So that begins, and one of the things I custom wrote audition monologues for other actors that I knew in order to help get them work. So that was an early writing gig that I sort of wrote for myself. But in order to deal with, you know, the marketing that one has to do, I don't know. I have a history as a pitch man. I worked as a Ginsu knife pitch man back in the day. But, you know, talking to a reader or talking to an interviewer about your book, it's not a character. And you are up there, and you are, like you indicated, you're naked. There's no character. Yeah. There's no persona that you can assume. It's you talking as passionately as you feel about the characters and about the work that you've done. I mean, I love the Ben Blackshaw series. I've got to say, I'm from the Chesapeake Bay area. I understand that country. I understand those people. And what I don't understand, I further augment with research, research, research. But in talking to other people, I love talking to other people. You know how solitary it can be for a writer to be creating something. And to me, and it's unacknowledged, and it's long hours. And then when you look at a reader who's holding your book in their hands, and they're excited, you say, ah, this is the element that connects the circle, that really brings it all together. You're talking to another human being who is excited with you about the world and the people that you've created. And there's nothing more enlivening than that. Sometimes, I will say, sometimes the social media aspect of it feels like a less creative side than the writing of the novels themselves. But I do that too, because that's part of the deal. That's how people find Ben Blackshaw. That's how people can enlist in his missions and join with him through the trials and tribulations that take place in the series.
Well, I'll tell you, Robert, we got about a minute left. So what I want to do is I want to go ahead and give you kind of the final word of saying, you know, best way to get in touch with you, you know, all your social media, things like that. Tell people maybe, you know, anything else that, you know, we haven't really touched on. So I'll leave the kind of the last minute up to you. So you go right ahead.
Thank you, John. Well, I'd really like to say, readers, get in touch. Prospective readers, get in touch. I can be reached online at robertblakewhitehill.com. If you want an email, write to me, rbw@robertblakewhitehill.com. Friend me on Facebook. I'm the only Robert Blake Whitehill on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. If you want to reach me through Twitter, it's at rbwhitehill. I welcome contact with readers. I don't like the whole solitary thing. I'd rather be talking to individuals like talking with you. And as far as Ben Blackshaw and the series goes, I think it's a wonderful introduction to a rare and special place in the world and the great people of Smith Island and the Eastern Shore of Maryland, where I'm from. The adventure is there, the drama is there, the emotional truth is there and available, and it's an absolute pleasure to bring this to readers, and I'm looking forward to working on the next adventure, Geronimo Hotshot.
Well, Robert, we want to thank you so much for coming on. It's such an exciting interview. I want to thank you so much for being here. Wish you nothing but the best. Can't wait to see when the movie arrives in theaters. So give us a heads up so we can be able to let people know and get the word out. And again, good luck in everything, and we look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Thanks again for inviting me. I look forward to visiting with you again, John. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So again, everybody, that is author Robert Blake Whitehill. And again, you can go to robertblakewhitehill.com for a lot more information, not only on the book that's out now, Tap Rock Bang, but the whole series, which started with Dead Rise and now up through Nitro Express. So it's book 3 here in his Ben Blackshaw series.